Welcome to Modern Sign Books on Blog Talk Radio. If you're interested in what makes your favorite authors and collectors tick, then you'll love hearing what they have to say in our live interviews. Learn how they got started writing, the books and authors that inspired them, what they have in their personal collections, and much more. Meet today's hottest authors as they discuss their life and writing in revealing conversations with our book specialist, Roger Nichols. And find us at modernsignbooks.blogspot.com. Now sit back and enjoy a few minutes with Modern Sign Books. Here's Roger.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Roger Nichols. Matt Gallagher is a former U.S. Army captain and the author of the acclaimed Iraq War memoir, Kaboom, based on the popular and controversial blog he kept when he was deployed. He holds a Master of Fine Arts in Fiction from Columbia, has written for The New York Times, The Atlantic, The Daily Beast, and Playboy, among others. He lives with his wife in Brooklyn and works as a writing instructor at Words After War, a literary nonprofit devoted to bringing veterans and civilians together to study conflict literature. His debut novel, Youngblood, just released a couple of days ago. Critical reactions have been persistently positive, readers using phrases like flat out great, brilliant, and beautifully executed. We're very pleased to welcome Matt Gallagher.
Hi, thanks for having me, Roger. Looking forward to chatting with you.
All right, this is, I'm going to be just a little fanboy here and say, this is beyond my usual reading style, but this was excellent and exposed me to a thought pattern that I'm not very familiar with, and that is probably a good thing. So much involvement here. This is a painful story in many ways, and yet it's educational as well in terms of what it's set up to do, which is tell the story of what it's actually like to serve over there, which you did. What was the thing you hope people would take away from this when they're done with it?
Well, appreciate the kind words. One of the goals I had with the novel was to bring readers to this subject and topic that otherwise might not be drawn to it. Kind of capturing the long-term effects of the nine-year war in Iraq was important for me as a writer to try to convey that to readers. Words like inheritance and legacy were keenly on my mind, not just in terms of how it affected the American soldiers that rotated in and out of that country, but also on the everyday Iraqi citizens who, you know, in America we have all these kind of neat terms to try to make sense of the war, the invasion, the sectarian war, the surge, the withdrawal. For them, it was and still is in many places part of the same disaster and mess. Conveying what that meant on individual souls, small families, was important. Was important to me.
Well, the way you structured this, I mean, as we set up, we meet the newly minted lieutenant Jack Porter. He struggles a bit to accept all the things that are going on around him, which is understandable given what's going on. Is that things are fluid and unsettled. He's siding with warlords who have blood on their hands from their past experiences, and yet it's a site of convenience. And then he starts having some pushback and some challenge to his authority from a brand new sergeant who has legitimate longtime combat experience. And that mm-hmm. sets up an interesting conflict from the beginning, and I find that fascinating, the idea of power and how it's used and how it can be taken away from people by strong personalities.
Yeah, that, exactly. I wanted to create kind of two polar opposites in Jack Porter and Sergeant Daniel Chambers. Very different worldviews, very different life philosophies, both wearing the American uniform, but both have very kind of different visions for how the end of this war, at least the American part of it, should end. For Jack, the narrator, this is his first tour. He's a little unsure of himself at first. So, you know, he's learning very quickly how the reality of the moment can conflict with ideals and ideas that maybe he's read about before. For Chambers, even though he kind of serves maybe as the novel's antagonist, I want many readers to come away with it with a sense of respect and awe. For him, I know I certainly did as I was writing him. He's a Machiavellian, but he gets things done. But you know, in the process of that, he's on his fourth tour, borne the burden of kind of America's forever wars in a very personal way. You know, what does that mean? How does that impact a human soul? You know, how does that shape his worldview and his philosophy? Mm-hmm. You know, those things interested me. And so kind of putting his world vision, his idea of Iraq in conflict with his lieutenant, with his officer, Jack, felt both natural and kind of a great diorama for me to engage these characters in.
You write it as if you've experienced these things personally. How much of that filters in here?
Maybe a bit, you know, but I'd already written from my perspective. I'd written the nonfiction Kaboom. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'd kind of gotten that out of my system. I didn't have that kind of, I think many first novelists feel the need to put a lot of their own experiences or perspectives in there. I didn't need to. I won't, you know, certainly I'd be a fool not to use some of my own memory and my own experiences to kind of get the maybe some of the texture right, to kind of get the feel of the place. You know, in many ways, this was a creation out of imagination. It kind of started with the question in my own deployment. A lot of things went right. Pretty much everything went right in terms of you know, swerving around the roadside bomb instead of hitting it, having really supportive, incredible sergeants that viewed their job as working with me rather than around me or against me. You know, I was able to bring all my soldiers home, which a lot of it was circumstantial. In Youngblood, it's more of a story when everything goes wrong, what happens, and how does that affect the human beings involved with that? How does that change them? Is really kind of the genesis for the novel started with that question.
There's a line in that, there's a lot of lines in there that leaped out at me. This one, I take notes when I read, and this one said, "We moved with edge, adrenaline juicing our blood, a hyper-consciousness the civilized world can never replicate." Now, those of us who've never been in a situation where we knew deep down in our souls that people were out there actively trying to kill us, how that would change us, that resonates as something that we would feel in that situation.
Yeah, it's something that I think a lot of war veterans, you know, try to reconcile when they come home. I know it was certainly the case with me. You know, I'm certainly no adrenaline junkie. You know, I don't like roller coasters. I don't jump out of planes or anything. But yeah, there was something about that the day-to-day clarity of survival. Of going out with a tribe of like-minded souls and trying to accomplish something, you know, having a daily sense of purpose. You know, I love writing. It's something I enjoy immensely, but it's not the same, and that's okay. It shouldn't be. I have a good friend, Phil Klei, the author of Redeployment, who says, you know, war is hell, but if war was only hell, it wouldn't perpetuate the way it does. And you know, I think those passages kind of tap into that sentiment a little bit.
And we know, or we have learned from Hollywood's and movies and from books, that things that are needed, the qualities that are required in time of war, when it's kill or be killed, do not translate well back into the real world where that's frowned upon.
Yeah, you know, I think nobody exemplifies that better in Youngblood than Sergeant Chambers. Mm-hmm. I had a friend who asked me, you know, what do you think some of these other characters would do if they, you know, if they weren't in the military, or what will they do after the military? And for most of the characters, I was able to come up with kind of an idea. I don't know. I you know, Chambers just seems like one of those people that is an ideal fit for the military, but. And as a citizen of a republic, I'm glad we have people like him serving. Certainly if my, son or daughter were put in his charge, I'd feel good about that because he's so pragmatic and so capable. On the other hand, he's a rough man who makes, some morally dubious decisions and calls. You know, as a citizen of the republic, that should concern us. So, you know, I kind of wanted to explore that dichotomy of somebody who's very capable and very good at their job. It's a job that requires some very difficult and morally gray decisions.
At one point, I think he says, or one of the characters says, "Better to be tried by 12 than carried by 6." Mm-hmm. That's a very pragmatic look at the outcomes.
Yeah, it's a phrase you hear whispered in the military, usually with a tinge of humor, as it should be. But that said, then you have people like Jack who need to function as a moral compass for his platoon, for his men, because one of the themes of the novel is how the consequences of armed conflict can never really be contained or expected, right? They will resonate much longer than anyone can ever expect, and lash out in wildly unexpected ways. So Chambers, in many ways, is a prisoner of the moment, right? He's doing those practical things, but he's focused on the here and the now. It's up to Jack, as the novel unfolds, I think to maybe take a wider view, take a step back, take a knee, and say, what are we doing? How will this? What will the secondary and tertiary effects of this be? And is it worth it? Those kind of different philosophies are just naturally going to conflict with one another, especially in a combat zone.
It just occurred to me that there are different steps of Maslow's hierarchy of need. Survival is basic, and then you go on to civilization and other needs and comfort of people. And it just occurred to me that they are in those different steps, and that's part of the tension in them.
Absolutely. I'd never really thought of it that way before, but I think I'm going to take that line and use it, because it's a good one.
Yeah. I want to quote a few more things. Oh, before I do that, though, I have to ask for sure, did, in your experience, you have a prize-fighting scorpion?
I didn't. I was stationed in a part of Iraq where they had scorpions, but they didn't have camel spiders. Mm-hmm. So it was stories you heard from friends and colleagues who were in that part of Iraq. And it was also I'd read about the German and British soldiers doing in North Africa during World War II. So it was one of those things that as I made the transition from nonfiction to fiction a couple years ago, I was like, right, now I can write about this. It was a fun thing to write about.
The match between the scorpion and the camel spider, and I think the interesting thing is who identifies with which character of the combatants is a nice touch as well.
Yeah, I think that's for listeners who haven't picked up the book yet. It's a staged prize bout between a camel spider and a scorpion. It's bored soldiers will do things like that, but sometimes worse things than that, frankly. It kind of sets the stage for that conflict between Jack Porter and Chambers that I've been talking about. Forces the soldiers in their charge to kind of pick sides in the moment. In addition to kind of just being an action sequence, I wanted that scene to really kind of set up the conflict and the dramatic tension to come. That's going to play out over the rest of the novel.
There's a scene where about two-thirds of the way through the book where I want to get back to the scorpion in a moment, but I just was flipping through the other sections here. Where Jack says at one point, I longed for the other side of the wire. It doesn't always make sense out there, but sometimes it did, and it offered purpose. Mm-hmm. There's a clarity there if you're just looking for survival that you don't have when you have to think about all these higher things.
Yeah, no, patrols are the simplest, most straightforward thing in the world, right? You got to go out there and accomplish whatever task it was, and you can focus on that. You can focus on the here and the now. It's back at the base later. You're maybe in a safer place, but you're with your thoughts. You're thinking about how that day played out or how that patrol played out, and things get complicated and complex quickly. For Jack, whose older brother was a decorated war hero from earlier in the war. And, he kind of come over expecting a much more straightforward experience. He's a young narrator, with a lot on his mind. And he takes things to heart and he chews them over often to his detriment. So I think that's why he's longing for, in that particular passage that you read, he's longing to be out there. Yeah, where it is a little bit more dangerous, but there's that clarity and you know, and that focus out there that you don't get back inside the wire.
And speaking of his brother Will, who went to West Point and was, you know, like the big successful older brother, he consults him from time to time, and then he writes, he says, he went to West Point because that's what people like him did. I went to regular college because that's what people like us did for countries like ours. Does that hint a bit at predestination?
Maybe a little bit, yeah, because that is kind of in the midst of Jack comes from a half-Catholic, half-Presbyterian background. So, you know, he's sorting through his own faith in the midst of this, you know, as if he didn't have enough on his mind with the war going on. You know, a lot of what he's seeing and experiencing in Iraq is causing him to kind of question his faith and really maybe focus on the parts of it, the specific parts of it that he's drawn to or he's confused by in a way that he hadn't before. And and it's related to kind of taps into the fact that such a small segment of his part of the American generation ended up joining up. So I think there's a hint of dark irony in that suggestion that's what people like us do for a country like ours when he's saying that.
Speaking of darkness, there are some dark poetry in here. In fact, at one line you put the iron poetry of machine gun bolts sliding into place, which I love that line.
Oh, thank you. Thanks. Yeah. You know, it was something that was important to me. Was kind of capturing that the dark poetry of it all, because it certainly was part of the experience, right? War, and particularly the way the Iraq War played out, you know, has all these unintended, unplanned for consequences. In this case, leaving much of a country in ruin. Mm-hmm. Right, everyday Iraqi citizens call it the collapse. Tapping into that darkness just needed to happen. You know, I couldn't write a novel about the Iraq War lightly. I needed to treat it with the darkness and the severity that it required.
I also want to pass on compliments about the attention to detail, and I found a couple of passages here that I'm going to share with you as well, because I did really take a lot of notes in this particular book. Well, you mentioned two girls and their Barbies, Arab in appearance, with various face veils as accessories. Is that a real thing?
Yeah, it is. So, you know, as I was drafting this novel and trying to find those details, because I think it's those kind of small, grainy details that can make a decent fiction good fiction, right? It adds that texture that is so important, or, you know, it's what I'm drawn to as a reader in books that I admire. So you know, I had my memory, of course, but it'd been a few years. You know, memory distorts, memory warps. So I went to my mom's house in Virginia, went through her basement, and you know, went through my old photographs. I read a ton of journalism and nonfiction about this time in Iraq, because it's set a few years after I was there myself, and I wanted to see how the war had changed, how the country had changed. I wanted to get it was important to me to have kind of full dimensional Iraqi characters in the book, and I there's a number of them, I hope, and you know, to kind of get a deeper sense of what their lives were like. I read a lot of oral histories about the Iraqi experience of this war. So some of it was memory for sure, but a lot of it was just painful, long research in the most journalistic sense.
Some of the things that really impressed me about this were the mental pictures, the movies in my mind that I got when I read this. There's one where you said, I watched a dust cyclone of plastic bags whip around a pair of soldiers. And boy, that stick in my mind. It still does for quite some time.
Yeah, that's I believe that's during the patrol through the Samoom, which is an Arab word for big nasty sandstorm. And those that is drawn from personal experience. Sometime in the spring of 2008, it was this remarkable red sandstorm. I'd never seen anything like it, and it just coated the town that we were stationed in for hours and hours. And it was beautiful for a couple minutes, and then it was like, all right, let's time to get back to the outpost. This is really tough to walk through. That passage was something that had lingered within me all these years later, from our patrol through the Samum.
There are moments of beauty that also hide danger throughout this, and or maybe you find beauty in moments of danger. But both of those concepts seem to be floating through this, and again, it gives an added dimension. I think this book is one of the ones that you could reread a number of times and get additional details from.
I hope so. I mean, I rewrote it enough. I think the books that I grew up admiring, some of them more books, some of them not, are still books that I return to for inspiration as a writer, but also just as a human being. Right. One of the great things about literature is the empathy it can allow in our souls, the way it can open us to different worlds, and the way it can change. Great example, of course, is Catcher in the Rye. You read that at 16, it means something very different to you than when you read it at 32 or whatever. So, yeah, I hope readers out there, finish Youngblood once and say, oh, you know what? Maybe I'd like to pick that up again in a few years and see how I relate to it then. That would be awesome.
Do you see more of this style of writing in your future?
Never want to say never, but I'm ready to move on to another subject. I'm certainly fascinated by it, not just because of my own past experience and as a veteran, but just as a citizen of a republic. I'm really fascinated with kind of America's changing relationship to its military, right? The football game celebrations, saluting hometown heroes, but simultaneously, kind of having a VA that is underfunded and overwhelmed. What does that mean for us as a country, both historically and in the moment? I'm a writer that has to write through things to figure out exactly how I feel about them. So I think I'll write about these subjects and essays and books going forward. But I can promise that the next one won't be set in Iraq. I'm done with that as a setting for at least a little while.
It's been cathartic for you already enough, huh?
Yeah, I think so. Cathartic in the sense that I know how I think and feel about these topics much more exactly than I did before I wrote the book. So yeah, very, very much so.
I did not look up your biography, but do you come from a military family?
Yes and no. Both my parents were Vietnam War protesters, but they were both children of World War II veterans. So my brother and I think they raised us with kind of a very healthy respect for the military. One of my grandfathers was a two-star admiral in the Navy. The other grandfather was a Navy corpsman medic, enlisted. So very much, respected military service. But we, as the children of Vietnam protesters, kind of also maybe a healthy skepticism of how and when military force is applied. The way families with us all at all times, it's not, we didn't necessarily talk about these things every night at the dinner table, but it's just part of who you are, as a human being. And it was, certainly a part of who I was once I made the decision to join the military and became a junior officer, kind of dealing with that, conflicting, visions and views, but understanding that they need to reconcile and coincide, because the world is made up of contradictions, it's important to reconcile those contradictions, both individually and at large.
Well, you should be running for office. That sounds really good to me.
I have a pretty hot Irish temper, so I'd probably say how I actually felt about something, and I don't think that flies in politics, but I do have many friends who are veterans who I've discussed these issues with, and I do look forward to writing for voting for them for senator here in the next few years.
Wow, it's I have to tell you that this has been enormously fascinating in terms of I wasn't sure what to expect when after reading this being so intense that you are very thoughtful and you've mulled over this stuff for a long time.
I have, you know, it's important that we as a country talk about these things, veteran and civilian, out in the open. I think it's become easier and easier for a variety of reasons to kind of feel disconnected from these wars, to feel disconnected from the armed violence being carried out in our name. But you know, and I say this as a citizen now, as a taxpayer. You know, we're all part of it. We're all part of it. You know, we didn't just wear our unit patches over there. We wore the American flag patch. We were representing everyone. So it often seems very difficult, almost near impossible, to kind of stay connected and to stay engaged with what's going on. But you know, the near impossible things are often things that most desperately need to be done. So that's as a writer, what can you do but write about these issues? You know,
right. But it informs your writing. I mean, this is. If you have a passion, and you certainly do, and that makes so much more depth into this, oh, somebody did this and then they went here. No, you've got themes, you've got morals, you've got questions. It's pretty dang good stuff, I have to say.
Thank you. Thanks, Roger. I appreciate it. Yeah, no, the passion is important to waking up every morning and sitting down in the chair and writing, even when you don't think you have any words left or when you desperately want to be doing anything else. I think any writer, you know, whatever their background, the ones that I admire most, at least, kind of speak to this, you got to do right by the work. And if you do right by the work and put in the time and the effort, and the critical scrutiny, everything else will fall into place.
Are you touring at this point?
Yeah, just started. We launched last night in Brooklyn and had a great turnout with a lot of family and friends, which is great. Doing a Manhattan event on Monday, then heading down to D.C. Late next week, and then up to New England, and then doing a West Coast swing come spring. So the ride has started. I'm just trying to hold on.
Well, see if you make sure that you can get something in the Northwest. And I want to say that if you can't get out here, or if you're listening and you would like to have one of his books signed, we happen to know a place where you can do that at vjbooks.com. So we hope that you'll be able to come to the Northwest. But if not, or if you just can't wait, well, there's your answer right there. One last thing, give us a peek behind the curtain. What can people find at your website?
My website's at mattgallagherauthor.com. I'm also on Twitter at mattgallagher0. And you can see some of the events listings. The full events listings are located on the website. There's also I've had a couple op-eds and essays come out this past week on many of the topics we just discussed. One essay was about my evolving and devolving relationship with Hemingway that was on the Paris Review. And you know, if listeners want to maybe get a sense of this topic or my writing style, it's all out there at mattgallagherauthor.com and on Twitter at mattgallagher0.
Boy. And I suspect you hit a lot of hits out of this. Hey, our guest today has been Matt Gallagher. The book is Young Blood. It is fantastic. It will make you think, and that's a rarity these days sometimes. Thanks so much for spending so much time with us. You've been very generous.
My pleasure, Roger. Great talking with you.
You've been listening to Modern Sign Books on Blog Talk Radio with book specialist Roger Nichols. Be sure to check us out at modernsignedbooks.blogspot.com.